Digital has given every voice a platform. Will yours be heard? If there is one skill that everyone needs today, it's not just the ability to communicate, it's the ability to connect. My mission is to give you the communication skills you'll need to inform and inspire, sometimes using digital tools, but always with human outcomes. In this episode, we speak with Belinda Aramidi, founder and principal consultant of SalesFluence.
So I suggest if you have a business and you want to use video to promote your business, you want to pair your business message with a lesson that someone can take away your video from your video content, whether or not they decide to do business with you. Because ultimately that's goodwill and you're building brand awareness and people will keep coming back for your video content. And when the time's right, they will remember you.
Let's begin. Belinda Aramidi, through her online presence and company SalesFluence, is on a mission to change the way we sell to one another. With more than 10 years of B2B sales experience and over 3 years studying and implementing digital and influencer marketing, Belinda now brings digital and influencer marketing strategies into B2B sales, so sales professionals can start influencing prospects in the way they want to buy. In addition to growing her business, she is a wife to one, a mom to three, and a friend to many, and has learned that excellent communication is the cornerstone of all successful relationships, and it has brought her to our show. Belinda Aramidi, thank you so much for joining the show and welcome.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks.
So please tell me about SalesFluence. That's your company. Tell me when, why, and how you started it.
Well, I guess I'll start with the name of the company. So SalesFluence is the combination of the words sales and influence. And pretty much my ethos is that using influencer marketing strategies within the B2B sales process. I have been very fortunate to be able to build some really significant and close relationships with some powerful influencers in the game, and I have a very deep respect for what it is that they do day in and day out. But I was also very intrigued, I'm sure you've seen, and in the industry, is an influencer will suggest something for people to buy something or check something out, and they can crash a website, and something can be sold out within only a few hours. And I thought, okay, well, if influencers can do this just by speaking about a product or endorsing it, similar to, you know, professional athletes or celebrities, what are things that a salesperson like myself, who, you know, my job is to get people to buy something, what are some of the learnings that I can take from what they do? And so I learned, I've applied, I've tested it in the company I was with before, and then now I do it for myself, what influencers do, but again, in the B2B sense. So that's how SalesFluence started. And my mission is just to change the way that we sell to each other, basically. I want it to be a less antagonizing situation for people who are on the receiving end of dealing with a salesperson. And I want the sale to be a little less resistant for people like myself, who really we're just out here trying to help make people's business lives and ultimately their personal lives better through the things that we sell.
Let me ask you, did you picture yourself prior to this becoming an entrepreneur? Was this part of the plan?
I think so. Ever since I was a child, I have been somebody who, I've always had that little bug. Like, I wanted to create something. Growing up, I wanted to actually be a lawyer. One, because I couldn't stand blood, so I knew doctor was out of the picture. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I knew that I wanted control over my own domain, but I wasn't really sure how that was going to happen. And sales, I think, was the perfect career for me, because you do get a certain level of autonomy that you don't in, in a lot of other, careers. But now that I'm working for myself, it's like, okay, this seems like a really good fit. This, why didn't I do this sooner?
You know, that makes complete sense. And I can't tell you how many people have told me that it was a natural fit and, you know, they followed through. So that's great. Let me ask you this. You know, you focus a lot on video. Your videos are fantastic. Why do you think videos are so powerful right now?
I think it's because with technology, I mean, it's a huge blessing, right? I mean, you know, you get to connect with people all over the world. And it makes it easier for people to do a plethora of things, from do business to be able to be connected with one another, right? But I also feel like with video paired with technology, it allows you to get a sense as to who the other person is. And I think that's why video is such an important, plays such an important role for people who have something to sell. Because ultimately, people want to buy from people that they feel like they know, they like, and they trust. And I feel that that's where influencers are really good, is that they share so much of who they are that people feel like, oh, I know Samantha or I know Todd, even though all they've done is seen them on video. So really, I think it's just a craving that people have to be able to utilize technology, but to still feel like they know and have that connection with whomever is on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, I've seen the research. I mean, the majority of online purchases today are often preceded by a video demonstration. And so people really want to get acquainted with whatever or whomever they're buying from. And so that seems to be the right fit.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And thankfully, the data it proves it.
Oh, absolutely. So with that, you know, I've seen a lot of your videos on LinkedIn and you do a wonderful job. You get great engagement. And so for the folks out there who are thinking about beginning to produce their own videos, what practical advice would you give them so that they perhaps could, you know, solicit some feedback, some employment, or perhaps some business?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll, you know, from the, you know, for someone who wants to start video, whether they're looking to get more business or to get employment, you know, not to get fussed over so much about the equipment. I mean, all of my videos that I put out on LinkedIn, and I'm, you know, people constantly send me messages asking, you know, what do you use to film? I mean, I film it on all my videos on an iPhone, and not even the better of the two cameras on the phone. I actually use the front camera versus the back camera. So, you know, it's, I think sometimes we can overthink the process of filming, think, oh, I need, you know, all this lighting and this fancy camera, and you don't. Oftentimes, if you have a newer model smartphone, you've got everything that you need. So that's part number one. And then, you know, if you're someone who's looking for a job, I would create content that highlights your strengths and the skills that you would bring to the table, so that if someone is, you know, considering, you know, bringing you in for an interview and they decide to look you up, you're going to have a catalog of videos that shows this is what I'm good at. And it not only tells people your story, but it also shows you to be someone who's an effective communicator, which is such an important part of being a part of a team, right? And then when it comes to business, you know, I would just have a word of caution to, you don't want all of your video content to be just a streaming roll of commercials for your company, because then people start tuning you out, right? It's like when you hear Christmas music at the beginning of the month and then you hear the same song 50 times later, you're just like, you almost get annoyed by it, right? So I suggest if you have a business and you want to use video to promote your business, you want to pair your business message with a lesson that someone can take away your video from your video content, whether or not they decide to do business with you. Because ultimately that's goodwill and you're building brand awareness and people will keep coming back for your video content. And when the time's right, they will remember you. And they'll remember that, you know what, I gave them 3 minutes of my time and it wasn't a waste.
So do you have a background in video or was this something you were able to pick up along the way?
I developed it along the way. I mean, YouTube is great. And, you know, you can find out so much information on the internet. I just think it's because it's been something that's been, you know, a closet passion of mine. I've done, you know, years of research and talking to people and learning and failing and falling on my face and, you know, just trial and error. I mean, that's the great thing about kind of, it's been like a passion project of mine. So I've been able to dedicate a lot of time into learning. And then, you know, I invested, you know, to learn from more from people who are a little more professional than me along the journey as well.
You know, I think you're very adept at video content creation in LinkedIn. And I think you really understand LinkedIn as a whole. I say that in part because you wrote this great article a little while back called Dear Managers and Business Owners, Wary of Their Employees That Are Active on LinkedIn. Could you tell us why you wrote that article and what you hope to convey to employers?
Yeah, well, you know, this actually was something that had been nagging me for a few months because I've been incredibly fortunate to have people resonate with my content on LinkedIn and to feel comfortable enough to, you know, share certain feelings that they have about being on the platform. And I've had, you know, several people reach out to me privately to say, you know what, I love your stuff, but I don't comment because I'm afraid of what my employer is going to think, or I want to create content myself because I want to join the discussion. But again, I'm afraid that my boss is going to be, you know, threatened by what I have to say or think that I'm trying to be active on LinkedIn because I'm looking for a job. And it's happened enough times. And then, you know, speaking to other creators on the platform where they say, yep, people are telling me the same thing, where it's, and even, you know, colleagues in my old job that I work, they said, oh, you're so active on LinkedIn. Like, how do you do it? And I'm just like, everyone needs to be on LinkedIn. And so I felt like as someone who has a little bit of a voice on the platform, that it's my responsibility to use that voice to try and shine the light on the other side of LinkedIn and how LinkedIn has changed. And that's actually how a lot of my content started. My first videos, they actually weren't targeted at salespeople at all. They were just targeted at regular LinkedIn users. You know, I did a video once that said, hey, here are three things to keep in mind so you don't get fired from your job for posting on LinkedIn. I want to demystify LinkedIn and kind of separate that whole idea of LinkedIn is a digital job board from what it has grown into, because LinkedIn, of course, used to be that, but it's not like that anymore. So I hope that answers the question.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It does. You know, I want to go back to a question before about owning your own business. Obviously, starting one's own business is not easy. But it's certainly not easy for a woman to found or start her own business. And, you know, I look at the statistics in North America. I'm based in the United States. You're in Canada. And it is definitely not easy for a woman of color in regards to starting her own business. What's really interesting, though, is that women business owners are coming to the fore faster than their male counterparts. What has been your experience?
Yeah, I guess it's not so much, you know, I think people are smart enough for the most part not to voice anything too overtly, you know, or just blatantly racist because I'm a female business owner or a female business owner of color. But I think a lot of times it's also the emotional stigma that we carry ourselves, and that fear of if I act a certain way, is it going to negatively reflect on my business and how people see me? I think that's baggage that I carry because it's something that is constantly in the back of my mind. And I just compare it to, you know, some of the open discussions that I have with women who are business owners who aren't women of color. And you can just tell that there's just a different filter. And this is not on, it's not anything about them, but it's just my experience, you know, being in the world that, you know, being the face of my business and speaking to other women who are female business owners themselves. I mean, I know a woman who for the first 3 years of her business pretended like she worked for her business and that it was owned by, you know, a Caucasian man. So I think the biggest hurdle is my own filter, with knowing that I'm a woman of color and just having to almost second or do that double check of everything and making sure, you know, that I've got my Sunday best in how I present myself, because I don't want someone else who is judging me from the outside, whether they be a person of color or not, put me into that negative stereotype bucket. Which can be exhausting. I think that's probably, you know, the biggest thing that comes out of that is that it's almost like doing double work.
Yes, I totally get it. In fact, I find myself having to put on certain filters in regards to social media so as to keep certain stereotypes at bay. So I get it. But, you know, you've had great success regardless. And so I was just thinking about maybe you can provide some more helpful tips on individuals in regards to their engagement.
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, it's really about being genuine and putting a little bit of yourself into the comments that you leave and the way that you interact with people as well. I think that people can really sense that I am just trying to be myself, be open, be honest, and genuinely try to add value to the community. And I think that's where the reason why a lot of my engagement is, you know, as good as it is, because I am trying to provide value and people are getting that. And they are in turn reciprocating by just expressing their gratitude for what it is that I'm trying to teach them. And then also, I mean, when people leave comments on my videos, I tend to respond with more than just a thank you. If they've really put a little bit of their heart and their soul into their comment, I try to return the favor. And I think that then in turn, when people see my content again and again and again, that encourages them to first stop, because that's hurdle number one, get people to stop the scroll, and then pay attention to what I have to say. And again, the cycle continues, provide the value, people respond by being appreciative, and then so on and so forth.
You know, I think LinkedIn is in its early days and we have yet to see the best it has to offer. But I want to think about the future for a moment and ask you, where do you see digital marketing, say, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years from now? What trends do you see on the horizon?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day when I was talking to the owner of a digital agency. And I think that personalization is going to just be, it's going to be huge. I mean, that is what people are going to want more and more as AI advances and makes it easier for companies to do this at scale. And I think that will just become the expectation. You know, people are going to say, okay, well, I really need to see myself in this ad. And so whether it's, you know, when you see a Ford ad that they feature a family of color versus, you know, a Caucasian family. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but, you know, I'll be watching BET and I notice all of a sudden Ford's got all these black families. And I'm like, isn't that something? You know, families that I don't see when I'm watching CNN, right? Mm-hmm. So I think people, you know, on the digital side, that's going to be the expectation that in order for this ad to resonate with me, in order for me to even pay attention, it's got to sound, look, and feel like me, because there's just so much information that we have to filter all the time. So I think personalization is going to be key. You know, that's really going to be the only way to kind of get people's attention, because we can personalize just about anything. I mean, from our food to our car, I mean, everything can come the way that looks a little more like us.
Belinda, you give great advice around digital marketing, but also other areas. You know, looking at your blog, you give some really timely advice for individuals. For instance, I'm thinking about an article that I read that you wrote. It says, how to deal with rejection in business. Rejection sucks. learn how to deal with it. And so I'm wondering, what other area or areas would you like to help people in business?
Ooh, good question. My initial answer is everything. I think really it's kind of just as my own personal thing. I love when I can encourage someone to do something that they've always wanted to do, but for whatever reason, they have felt like they couldn't. I mean, that feeling for me personally is amazing. And just knowing what it can do for someone else, I mean, that's just the best thing ever. And I think that's where a lot of my content comes from, where it's like, okay, how is someone feeling right now about something? And what can I say to help them not feel that way anymore? I think that, you know, there are a lot of people with a lot of great ideas. And mind you, I don't think everyone should own a business. There are some really, really big perks to working for someone else. You know, and there's a lot of, you know, downsides to being an entrepreneur. So trust me, I'm not one of those people who thinks that everyone should be an entrepreneur, because I don't. And plus, if everyone's an entrepreneur, who's going to scale these businesses, you know? But yeah, I think that's the number one thing, is that, you know, mindset. And I feel that word's a little bit overused these days, but mindset is such a huge thing. I've seen in the most successful people that I'm able to have a regular presence in their life, that when you're able to overcome something within your mind and you're able to conquer that, like, you become the most powerful person ever. So whether you're an entrepreneur or you're working for someone else, when you're able to conquer, you know, a fear or a frustration or an anxiety, I mean, you just feel like a superhero. And if I can help be that person who helps someone overcome something, I mean, you know, that's reason to get out of bed.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, clearly helping people overcome things is going to get you into a lot of different areas. So that's fantastic. You know, I want to talk a little bit about other things that you do. You do a considerable amount of volunteer work. So I was wondering if you can let our audience know what that's all about.
Yeah, no problem. So this all started, my husband has a basketball academy, AAU. And so he works with kids from about 10 years old, you know, to about 18, 19 before they go off to college, right? And so, you know, I spend a lot of time kind of mentoring the kids and just listening to them and being that adult sounding board that isn't their parents, or someone that their parent has, you know, sent them off to, you know, give them a good talking to. I think that being a kid is really, it's hard. I mean, especially when, you know, you get into those teenage years, right? I mean, it's a great time. I mean, being an adult is the world's biggest scam. but, you know, I have a passion for just being able to listen to kids and help give them that guidance and direction that is just so hard for parents to give. I mean, you know, I'm in a fortunate position to be around a lot of kids, you know, due to my husband's business. But I just think it's really important for kids to have that adult sounding board who, you know, will agree with them, but will also give them the pushback when they need it. And then, you know, I don't really talk about this a lot, but this is kind of like if I won the lottery, or, you know, if at some point, you know, my business grows, you know, to the point where I'm able to do this, is I actually have, you know, a thing with, you know, people who go to jail and come out, you know, they don't have a life sentence. They come out, and the lack of supports that often is in society for these people. So kind of my, you know, my 25-year plan would be to open up several businesses, you know, around North America. I think in my head, it starts in Florida. I know, as a Canadian, it's strange. But just opening up a business where I'm actively seeking people who have come out of the prison system and are looking for an opportunity to start something else. And I think the seed was planted when I was working at a company, and one of the bosses was going through resumes, and this gentleman wrote in and said, you know what, I spent 2 years in prison, and he explained his situation, and My boss just laughed and said, yeah, we're really going to hire someone who just went to prison next. And I just felt so terrible because I felt like here's this guy pouring his heart out, being honest so that it's not something that comes out later on in the process. And you're taking it as a joke. And, you know, I think I was probably, you know, I was in my early 20s at the time. And it just left such a profound effect on me where I said, you know what? If I'm ever in a position to be able to help people who are just trying to do the right thing, I'm absolutely going to do that because that's the only way that people don't reoffend, right? If they have a reason to come out of bed and, you know, they are able to put food on the table and a roof over their heads, because that's ultimately what any of us want to do, right? So I went off on a tangent there.
Wow, that's such a powerful thought. You know, there are many individuals, you know, I'm just thinking about this, who, you know, they come out, they can't find work, so they go into business for themselves, or they take on very low paying jobs, and it's a struggle. And so, you know, the temptation, of course, is to do something that they shouldn't to help make ends meet and, you know, talk about recidivism. But it's commendable what you're doing.
And I think just being a person of color, right, you can just see how easy it is to get just tied up in the system. And once you're in there, like, God help you. And I think that's probably it's just the perspective difference, right, where, you know, because we typically don't have as many people within our community owned businesses who can just say, hey, oh, just go talk to Uncle Rick or something, right? He'll put you on and then you can work your way up. We don't have those opportunities. So I feel like it's almost, you know, on those of us who have the aptitude to create businesses and opportunities to, if and when we can, look not just back down the path that we came, because I think that I'm incredibly fortunate because a couple of decisions early on in life could have put me on a completely different path, but also to look a couple rows over and see, okay, well, you know, Jennifer or Peter, whomever, you know, they took a different path than me, but they're really trying to do better. And I feel like, you know, being a person of color, we know those stories and we've got to uplift ourselves. We can't just depend on others to do it for us.
Wow. This is really amazing. You know, come to think of it, Belinda, I don't think I know what you went to school for. What did you study in university?
So I started out to do economics, and I hated it. So then I ended up going into political science and sociology. So now it's funny, as you ask, I'm like, maybe that's also where it came from, because I learned about things like double jeopardy, you know, being a woman and, you know, of color, it's, you know, it's like a double whammy. And so I think a lot of these social issues, as I was, you know, going through school and writing these papers and getting really disgruntled about stuff, maybe that's where all of my thinking comes from. I hadn't really actually made the connection until now.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess you can connect the dots when you look back at it. Makes sense. But let's move forward. In fact, let's think forward. What would you like to be doing in the future, say 3 to 5 years from now?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I started my business because I've got 3 young kids, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think the greatest appeal for me in business and starting my own business is just control over my time as much as possible. When my kids are sick, I don't want to have to feel bad that I'm not somewhere else per se, and be able to kind of control my time as much as possible. I mean, I know enough entrepreneurs to know that, you know, yes, you're in charge of your time, but you're still, you know, you still have deliverables and responsibilities, right? So, you know, I just want to make a good life for myself and for my family and be able to, you know, make a positive effect on the world. The goal isn't to have a 30,000 square foot house, because that sounds exhausting. So I want my company to still be around 5 years from now. I would love to have made a positive, you know, impact on, you know, the sales industry. And then also I know that if I'm able to use my voice to get, you know, just a handful of powerful people to give, you know, Black people, you know, just I'll say it as it is, give Black people a second chance, a second look, and not just overlook us and assume, you know, the stereotypes that exist. Because I know without a shadow of a doubt that you know, people have a perception of what I'll be and what I can do. And then once they actually work with me, that perception is changed. And I want to do that enough times and with enough powerful people that it makes it easier for other people who come down the line and who look like me and speak like me to get a chance and say, you know what, I'm going to give this person a chance when a couple of years ago I wouldn't have. And it's all because Belinda was so wonderful.
You know, it gets me thinking about social media. Do you think, like, people are listening to this podcast, someone's listening to this podcast right now, and maybe they're rethinking their view or perception of Black people. Do you think social media can change people's perceptions?
I think it has. I think, so it's kind of a two-pronged thing, right? So I'll notice, you know, Twitter is a great place. It can also be this black hole of terrible. But I see the conversations. I'm a big comment reader. And if that's like a number one tip for anyone, like if you want to learn anything about humans, read the comments. But also, you know, be prepared, because that's also where the, you know, the deplorables hang out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because of social media, groups that typically don't talk to each other or don't cross paths, they have to cross paths. And you're able to have a discussion. And I think that's where change begins. It's, I'm going to say how I feel. You're going to say how you feel. And somewhere along the way, we're going to try and meet in the middle. And that's where understanding happens. I think that social media allows for these conversations to happen. And, you know, I think without these conversations, like, nothing's going to change. I am a little bit weary of social media as well, because people tend to gravitate towards groups that they like, and then you have groupthink, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the negative things that have happened in the last, you know, few years especially, have happened because of social media. But at the end of the day, I also feel like these, you know, people of color have been telling people who aren't of color that certain things are happening, and certain people within your own communities think and act this way. And the blessing of social media, as disgusting as it may be, is that now it's like, you know, people who aren't people of color, they see it. It's like, it's not just, you know, black people just talking and saying stuff that you don't want to believe exists. It's now you can see it for your own eyes. I mean, we weren't making this up. And I think that's probably it's the conversation that's, you know, benefit number one. And then benefit number two, it's, you can't hide from it anymore. It's now all out in the open, for better or for worse.
You know, these are somewhat sensitive issues, but I think they could be part of very important conversations, even professional conversations, maybe around hiring practices. So I really appreciate talking about these things. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, is there someone on LinkedIn, and I say LinkedIn because this, you know, a professional platform, is there someone on LinkedIn who you look up to as someone who's using it well, and perhaps even touching on issues such as these to get people to talk or to think?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, if I'm going to be completely honest, there isn't anyone really. I think that LinkedIn is still fairly politically correct. I think people are still, you know, getting comfortable on the platform. Mm-hmm. But I will say there is someone by the name of Deanna Reese Stinson, and she is a woman of color as well. And I'm not just saying her name because she's a woman of color, but because I really do, I believe in the work that she does. She works at the VP and higher level on diversity and inclusion, but her ethos is about working from the ground up. So not just a top down where this is what the CEO thinks diversity and inclusion should look like, and it's my job to come in here and help permeate it through the company. The way she approaches it is, she says, you know what, diversity and inclusion is going to look like something to you, Mr. CEO, but diversity and inclusion may look like something different to the very group that you want to be more diverse and inclusive. So why don't we find out what diversity and inclusion means to them, the people who are here at your company, and bring your ideas and their ideas together so then we can get more employee buy-in, right? And get people to understand. And it's not just about, you know, getting it from people of color, it's from everyone in the workforce. What does diversity and inclusion look like to you, you know, person who's pink, yellow, green, right? And I think that's so valuable to be able to work with the people who have the power to make the change, but implore them to listen to the people who typically are the most diverse at the company. And I just think that is going to be revolutionary.
It's funny, I'm thinking about my own question and I couldn't think of anyone myself. I mean, perhaps now I think about you, but I guess we have to keep this conversation going.
I know, as you talked about it, I said, you know what, this is something I think in 2019 that I have to figure out a way to talk about. I think it's tough, right? Because I want it to be inclusive and I don't want to alienate, but I also don't want to downplay the significance of the conversation. So I'll have to think about it, but I definitely think it's something at some point I have to, or I want to talk about. I just don't know how.
Well, I'm sure you will find a way. So keep us posted. You certainly have our support. I was wondering if you can close our conversation and just thinking about communicating, and that's at the heart of the show. Could you leave our audience with a last thought about how to be a better, more effective digital communicator?
Yeah. It sounds so cliche. I almost hate saying it, but I feel like, you know, if people hear it enough, then, you know, people will listen. To be as genuine as possible. I mean, I think that people, and this works with influencers as well, is people like to know what they're going to get, right? So the easiest way for you to, you know, keep doing something and keep creating content, whether it's in blog form or with video or like this, you know, in a podcast version, is to just be yourself. Because that people will resonate with that. And that will come through, you know, in your videos. People can sniff that out. I don't know how, but I know I can. And I'm sure, you know, anyone listening to this can just sense, you know, you can just sense a fake. Even if you can't put your finger on it, you know what it is. So, you know, just be genuine, be who you are. And then, you know, I think the other piece of, you know, actionable advice is all of your content should be value driven. Because that's what keeps people coming back. It's, you know, not the theatrics, it's not having the best editing or what have you. All that stuff is great. But if there isn't any value, I mean, it doesn't matter if you spend $10,000 on video equipment. The content is junk because it's just content for the vanity of you wanting to create something versus content that is actually going to help people transform their lives.
That's great advice. I really appreciate that. I think people will benefit from it. And since we're at the beginning of the new year, I suspect that they can put that into practice. So thank you for that.
No problem. No problem. And I try to be, you know, content, you know, agnostic, whether it's in written word or, you know, you're doing video or it's audio, just be yourself and drive value. And that's honestly, that's the secret. That's the secret to anyone who's found any kind of success digitally.
Belinda Ramady, thank you so much for joining us. This was a wonderful conversation. Wishing you all the best with sales fluence and with all the things that we discussed. I can't wait to hear about the progress that you make.
Thank you. No, this has been fun. Thank you. I really appreciate, you know, the opportunity to voice my thoughts. I mean, who knew that I have something of value to say?
So that's our show for today. Thank you so much again for joining us. Hey, I would love to hear from you. If you could, please drop me a line at craig.thomason@gmail.com. And of course, if you really enjoy the podcast shows, feel free to like, comment, and or subscribe. Take care.